Hello and welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange, broadcasting from Gadigal Country. I'm Kristen Gallagher, and the Wide Open Air Exchange is a place to meet people with fascinating vocations, interesting ideas, and special interests. Today is a domestic policy issue, Australia's aged care system and aged care reforms. And our guest is Dr. Cathy Munro. Cathy's PhD research was in health policy with a project looking at residential aged care policy in Australia. Cathy's highest qualification is a Doctor of Philosophy from the Faculty of Medicine and Health at the University of Sydney. As well as having the academic qualifications, Cathy has been a non-executive on a board of an aged care provider and also has personal experience from helping her mother to access aged care services in Australia. So, Cathy Munro, welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I thought maybe we could start with some foundational knowledge and information for someone who might be totally new to the subject of aged care. We like to have no assumed knowledge on this program. It's kind of a 101. We sometimes just get really kind of 101 lessons from our guests. How would you define, you know, aged care and or residential aged care, just to give us a sort of context of what we're talking about?
Okay. Yeah, our aged care system consists of residential aged care, which means that older people, as they need it, they can live in aged care facility. Yeah. So there will be on-site care round the clock in terms of the need arises, so that that there are someone on hand to provide that assistance where you may not get that level of care or attention when you live at home.
Yes. Where you have your own room mostly or not always?
Mostly, yes. Yeah. I mean, things are changing in terms of structurally and the accommodation wise, and it's really more of a what's available. Mm. And generally there's a single room, but there are shared rooms, the shared accommodation. But to my knowledge, they are still being provided, but probably not as much as in command as in private rooms.
Yes, actually.
Single rooms.
Now that I think about it, it was many years ago now, probably about 15 years ago, but there was an older person in the family who I visited in an aged care where they were in a shared room. There were three ladies, three beds in the same room, and it definitely wasn't a hospital. She was in her 90s. She wasn't ill, she was old. You know,
Yes.
She certainly wasn't in palliative care. It wasn't a hospice.
Frail.
Yeah, she was frail. She couldn't live at home anymore.
Yeah.
And she'd had a fall and, you know, hadn't been able to go return home. And there were nurses or aged care workers within where she was living who, monitored her, I suppose. Was that residential aged care?
Yes, that sounds like it. Yeah. Shared rooms are not as common now as what used to be.
Yeah.
To my knowledge. And then the other component is largely it's a home and community-based or supported care, which means there are funding available for older people in need that they can receive care services at their homes, and also community supported. So if, for example, if they need the transport to medical appointments, things like that, then there's provision in funding and the services available to assist them in that way.
For an older person, there's a range of services they might be able to access under the banner of kind of aged care
system.
Transportation, maybe some nursing in your home, or but then there's some people who live within, you said, facility. Is that like an aged care home?
It used to be known as nursing homes.
Nursing homes.
So it used to be known as nursing home. Now it's residential aged care. Aged care facilities.
I'm having trouble with the word facility because it sounds a bit clinical. Whereas I think, can I say aged care home? Because it is where, if someone's living there, if it's residential aged care, does it become their home? Can you say aged care home? Or is that...
I guess that's not commonly used. Yeah. But you make a good point in terms of home-like environment.
Yes.
It is technically a facility sort of gives a sterile type of impression.
I mean, a prison is a facility.
So if you can refer to it as a residential aged care. Yes. So residential aged care is different to home care.
Yes.
So currently, the current framework, if you like, and how people understand it, it's a home care package, means that they receive care at their own homes, and then residential aged care setting. If you prefer, it's that they go into a different environment and that has a different structure of care.
And so can you tell us about your interest in aged care policy as a non-executive on a board of a provider?
Yes. Yes, I was on a board of a not-for-profit, faith-based aged care provider who had different type of accommodation for older people at that stage. And so I was involved at that level. It's a aged care governance in a residential aged care setting, if you like. And my experience of that was during a time there were changes in residential aged care in terms of person-centered care. So that was already also part of the aging in place, to really moving the focus onto the older people themselves in terms of what they needed, the type of care and the approach to care. And so my involvement during that change was that revealed to me that the government policy implementation affects in many levels and many levels of an organisation who provides the care. And it's a lot more complex than just having the policy in place in terms of having your own set of policies and procedures to reflect what the government's policy focus was or the objectives. There were a lot more complexity, if you like, to implementing government policy at operational level. So that piqued my interest in terms of really understand what the connection there and how is the most effective way or the best way to approach that implementation so that older people that receive care wouldn't be impacted in a negative way. So that was my interest.
What I'm hearing is you got a front row, a frontline view of or insight into seeing that there is a national, there are regulations. If you are running aged care home or facility, you are bound by laws and regulations or a regulatory regime that's set by the national, it's the Commonwealth government, federal government here in Australia, and that will restrict or set sort of boundaries on what you can do, what you can and can't do within your own aged care facility. It might be private, it might be non-profit and not government, but you are bound by the rules and regulations that are set by the federal government.
Yes, so we are governed
by
the regulatory requirements and legislation.
Okay, so sometimes I find it's helpful to say something back to you to check that I'm understanding properly and that I didn't misinterpret.
Yep. Yes.
Are you saying you became involved with working with a provider being or the organisation that runs an aged care, residential aged care facility, or more than one? you mentioned faith-based, and for anyone who's possibly not in Australia, so we do have social services that are government-run in Australia, but there's a big reliance on charities and non-government organisations providing a lot of those social services, and a lot of them are faith-based, so particularly a lot of Christian organisations that run aged care facilities that I know of. There might be other faiths and other religions as well, but the ones that I sort of perhaps more prominently know of or see around run by church-based organisations, but they're not usually, from my understanding, it's not evangelical. It's sort of a pastoral, the actual service itself is somewhat secular. You don't come to the facility and you're part of there's not preaching and things like that going on in the church, but it's because the organisations believe and care for community and want to provide those kind of services. Is that, I mean, am I kind of?
Yes, yeah. Yes, that's interesting explanation. It's helpful for me to hear that understanding, that level of understanding what faith-based organisations are. In Australia, historically, the aged care system, it's really provided from, arises out of, I should say, arose out of the charity organisations, largely faith-based. So the Anglicans, the Baptists and the Catholics care and Presbyterians, that's the range of faith-based that I, in my research, that really prominent, as you said, prominent in providing that care relief system before the aged care policy really became on the national government policy agenda.
Yes, I see.
When you're correct in saying that the service are provided is really following what our aged care structures are and the policies and regulatory system and structures, if you like. So it's not evangelical environment, if you like, but as you said, the pastoral care.
You might be able to get communion in pastoral, your bed if you're Catholic on a Sunday.
So
a priest might come around and that kind of thing.
There are pastoral services available based on people's different faith.
Yeah.
But the nature of such organisations really is very, very much traditional providers, if you like, and they have a approach to care as already very much person-centered care, that the workers there are passionate in terms of the meaning in the works they do. So in that sense, it's the not-for-profit faith-based organizations in my research that really, really project that impression. And hence, in my own experience with my mother, my preference was for faith-based, not-for-profit providers.
You're listening to the Wide Open Air Exchange. Our guest is Dr. Cathy Munro, whose PhD project in health policy was looking at Australia's aged care reforms. Cathy also has insights about the implementation of aged care reforms from her time as a non-executive on the board of a faith-based aged care provider. As well as having that insight of seeing, you know, what's required of the provider, you have personal experience as well of your mother having been in aged care. What are you comfortable sharing about that? It's totally up to you.
No, I'm very happy to share my experience. My mother's care that she needed at the time was very timely, if you like. It is really in sync with my PhD focus because of the reforms that we're talking about. It was really that there were two components. One is residential aged care and the home care packages at the time. And so my mother's need were, to begin with, her needs were in the home care package area. And then where my focus was on residential aged care is also good combination in terms of my understanding of the system itself. So I was able to almost the test run, if you like, of the new aged care system in the home care package and the processes and procedures and the services that were available and how to access them. That was at the beginning of the reforms. That reforms, and I have to really clarify that the reforms really started from 2012, when the first aged care reform package was announced. It was April 2012. So by 2017, that was when my mum started to need care, needs a level of services that I wasn't able to provide. And that's when my data collection was started, or when I first started planning my data collection. So that was a halfway through that first 10-year reform time frame it was proposed. So in 2012, the government proposed a 10-year reform package or reform implementation period.
Yes.
So 2017 was halfway through those 10 years. It was a very interesting time.
Mm. In that timeline, so 2012 being a kind of a point in the timeline of reform, where does the Royal Commission fit in? And what problem was that responding to?
Great question. Yeah, the Royal Commission was to address the quality of care, to really address the concern for quality of care in all areas and the lack of, if you like, the lack of services available to older people in need, particularly in the home care, package area, which means that they're at home needing to receive services. And the other focus was on the quality of care in residential aged care setting.
There were some sort of high profile things that were revealed in the media. There were stories and incidences that some family members of older people in aged care were concerned about what they were seeing in terms of the care or treatment of their elderly relatives. Mm. I don't know if that was part of the catalyst for the Royal Commission, but there were very sort of troubling and disturbing stories of neglect.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
serious.
Certainly the interim report out of the Royal Commission was titled Neglect.
Right.
It really highlighted the deficiency on the ground. Certainly in my research really delved into why that was, particularly in a residential aged care setting, and how our funding structure and the emphasis on economic efficiency really impacted on the level of care. The level of care provided and the quality of care.
You're not going to pay your staff well. You're not going to be able to attract people who are there wanting to willingly give good care to the people in the homes or in the residential care.
The aged care funding structure is a very complex area, and it's very much in short the funding structure is very much task-oriented, so task-focused. So it's really about the efficiency of people that perform those tasks.
Oh, I see. So that kind of KPI type of approach.
So then the funding is based on that very much. So clinical care may take longer than just personal care, and then that's where the funding will be. So if there's more clinical care tasks performed, and then you can claim that level of funding according to the clinical care task you perform, or then the personal care, like building relationship, making the older people feel at home by building that relationship with them and share life stories almost and spending time with them, that wasn't part of the clinical care. So the funding structure where we had been is very much not person-centred.
Yes, which is what you would want for your relative or for yourself if you were in that kind of service.
So if we're talking about consumer needs, that's the area that they need most.
And is that what flowed from the recommendations of the Royal Commission? Was that, you know, I know these are big questions, but
were a whole host of recommendations coming out of a Royal Commission. Yes, that is a certainly complex area, and there are many intricacies within these complexities. It's something that not a lot of people, you know, certainly the older people and their families wouldn't be aware. And they're just coming back to the constraints, if you like, the financial constraints of providers in providing care by the funding structure. So that has been a fairly long term. So that funding structure for a residential aged care setting has been for many years, so since 1950s. in terms of the clinical care focused, a task oriented structure,
and not personal care, person centered.
Not about relationship building and that interpersonal care. Mm. So there's many elements that relationship building would benefit even the clinical side of outcomes for older people and for their families.
You're listening to the Wide Open Air Exchange. Our topic on the Wide Open Air Exchange today is aged care policy in Australia and aged care reform. And we've heard the term person-centred care come up. And if you're a regular listener of the program, you might recall we've heard a similar principle explained in previous conversations with guests who were here to speak about other kinds of care policy. Thinking specifically about a recent episode on homelessness and an earlier one on adult learning with a guest who was teaching in prisons. So here we are again with a policy principle pivoting to person-centred care as part of Australia's aged care reforms. And I also want to acknowledge that aged care reform is an ongoing political issue. It's unfolding in as a news story about the timing of the rollout of the implementation of aged care reforms in Australia. And the Wide Open Air Exchange is not a news and current affairs program. And so what we're covering today is it's not going to be able to get into all of the nuances of the complexity of the issues around aged care reform. Today it's been more of a general introduction, and in the context of the PhD research of our guest, Dr. Cathy Munro. Is there more to say about the actual aged care reforms that we're speaking about? Does it relate to what you were saying about the clinical versus personal care? In essence, I'm sure it's complex, but what were some of the major aged care reforms that we're talking about? What are they?
That's a good question, because in my research, not a lot of people on the ground, workforce included, and older people and their families knew much about the aged care reforms and why they're reforms and what were the objectives.
Yes.
For example, a very prominent one in my research was that the objectives of reform is more of consumer focused, so consumer oriented, looking at what the older people need themselves and how the care and how the services provision can be catered, almost like individualized. Now, a lot of my study participants didn't know that. And so that really highlight the disconnect through that caused by a lack of understanding from each level. So people on the operational level and people who are receiving care.
Yeah, so this might be a good place for me to just let people know that your thesis title is Impact of Australia's Aged Care Reforms on Governance, Operations and Recipients of Residential Aged Care in Australia. It was a qualitative study. You conducted interviews with each of those cohorts, so people in governance, in operations, and recipients. And so when you say, you know, when you talk about people not knowing, you were doing interviews, conducting interviews as part of your methods. So you were getting this sort of insight into what the perceptions of the reforms were from each of those sort of cohorts, right?
Yes, yes. So there was an acknowledged, or was fairly commonly acknowledged amongst my study participants that they were not aware of the reform's objectives, particularly the consumer-focused objectives.
Yeah.
And they certainly did not experience that level of consumer-focused care.
Mm.
Basically, there's a lack of understanding of the context. For example, that you mentioned the Royal Commission talking about the concerns that highlighted of the level of care that people were receiving in a residential setting. There's, as in my research, I also highlighted the structural, not causal, but the long-term funding structure had resulted in the level of financial deficiency amongst the particularly not-for-profit organisations, that they are constrained in the funding structure and they were constrained in many other ways of constrained in terms of being unable to provide the level of care that they wanted to provide.
And because of those the regulatory
yes,
constraints.
So it's not that that's what they set out to do. The economic efficiency focus of the policy, along with the funding structure over the years, it really has resulted in a operational mentality of you're dependent on government funding.
Yes.
Therefore, so it's a government funding dependency, but also regulatory compliant, because the government funding is contingent on compliance. The care practice or the practices of care, delivering care, it's really about compliance. Thinking about my own mother's experience, there were some particular way that she wanted to be cared for, if you like, and or some equipment that she wanted to have because of that's her identity and, you know, that sort of aligns with her cultural values. But she was not able to be provided that or have her own equipment there on site at a residential aged care setting because of the regulations and the risks that post and not to mention work and health safety measures that were in place and also really the risk management framework that constrains the providers and workers themselves to be able to cater for my mother's needs.
So there might be something that a resident wants to have for their own comfort, but because of, say, OH&S issues, it can't be there because the provider has a responsibility, a legal one, to the staff. And so there's these sort of kind of competing or conflicting interests in a way, but perhaps the resident doesn't know or understand that it's not just a provider being hardline about that want or need, it's that they are obliged to...
They're constrained. Yes. Okay. Yeah, so that's a level of understanding that as consumers, if we can call them that, that they don't have that level of insight or in-depth of understanding. From the provider's perspective as a business or an organisation, as you said, they have legal obligations to duty of care of their staff, and that comes with the risk management measures to ensure that they fulfil their obligations.
Yeah. You know, it's I can see the complexity because on the one hand, I think we do need to look after workers and aged care workers have very difficult conditions and low pay and high levels of care that they're often given and they should be safe and looked after. And then also, though, it's sad that someone in their last and later years of their life can't necessarily live in the most comfortable way that, you know, suits their personal needs because of a workplace law or regulation.
Yes.
It's, yes, sad.
It was. In my mother's words, that she went in and she said that it just seemed that she needed to look after the staff rather than the staff looking after her. They were her words. So that's quite revealing,
yeah.
I think, from an older person's perspective, that who, as you say, at that stage in life, they're vulnerable and they really need the sympathy and understanding, empathy, and at least there's a level of understanding expressed to them that would give them a comfort.
Yes. Dr. Kathy Munro has been kindly sharing her personal experience of her mother in aged care, along with insights from Kathy's PhD research on the impact of Australia's aged care reforms on governance, operations, and recipients of residential aged care in Australia. So interesting that the research that you did was that kind of multi-perspective research that you spoke with people at each kind of those different cohorts?
A different point of the care delivery yes. process.
Thank you.
So a different point.
Yes.
And they all have their responsibilities to fulfill, but generally, certainly through my experience and my research, the workers themselves really do want to build that relationship with the people that they providing the care to, because that makes their work meaningful and purposeful and more enjoyable. So they're not just there to perform a task.
Yeah.
And that's not what they really prefer doing.
Yes. And yet I can also see the need for governance, and particularly when you're talking about services to vulnerable people. I don't like the idea of it being a kind of Wild West with no reform, with no regulation either, because, you know, I see the potential for neglect and other negative things happening. So I'm getting a sense of the complexity of it from this conversation. And how did you sort of finish with your PhD project, with all those insights that you gathered? What was the kind of, for you, what was the conclusion of the research that you did at that time?
Yes, I certainly had some recommendations. Well, I had made a comment in terms of for policymakers, there should not be an expectation that when policies change, the providers, organisations and older people themselves just need to accept them. There needs to be a level of understanding of the process of implementing any policy changes and what costs are involved and the time frame that's needed.
Yeah.
To make it effective and to really ensure that the objectives are achieved. And providers themselves need the support in that implementation process. For example, in my research, I found that there was support from the government to support the organisations to implement in the residential aged care setting. There was a time frame of 3 years. So that just that one component of support, which was just providing some business advice to restructure your organization so that you can comply or you can follow or you can implement the reforms. But that was, to me, is a very superficial level, providing some business advice to organizations to change their business practices within the 3 year time frame. So that was one component of assistance. But there was really no substantial support from the government that would demonstrate their understanding of what it takes to implement policy reforms.
Yes.
So there's lack of understanding. And I also, at the end of my research, and I felt there's lack of knowledge of our aged care system. The reason I was able to care for my mother and ensure the level of care she received was to a satisfactory level, if you like, it's because of my knowledge.
Yes, but you shouldn't have to have an expertise in aged care to get good care for your parents.
My concern is how many people, how many families have that level of understanding and knowledge?
Very few.
To be able to ensure that their loved ones' care needs are met.
You know, Kathy, I know there's so much more that we could speak about, and you'd be very welcome to come back another time. Thank you for giving us an introduction into some of the issues around residential aged care in Australia.
Thank you. I'll be glad to come back.
Yeah, that's Kathy Munro, Dr. Kathy Munro, with an introduction, or for me, what was an introduction to Australia's aged care system. A big impression I have is this use of terms like consumer and facility, which, even though I know are technically correct in the sense of a service and in some cases a business and in terms of an area that's governed by public policy, but I do find that concerning. This is the discourse around the place where so many of our seniors will spend their final years. I really hope the reforms can have the effect of making our seniors as comfortable as possible when they're living in residential care. That's all we've got time for this week. Thanks again to Kathy Munro for being an excellent guest. Thanks to Vape Dads for use of the track Whiskey Priest for the Wide Open Air Exchange theme music. Thanks so much for listening, and bye for now.